Word on Today FM.
Now it is time for the last word on the environment. Plenty for us to talk about, including changes from the Trump administration. Again, we're going to be talking about a little bit later on, where they're moving to try and criminally charge major climate groups. Bill Gates slashing staff in his climate group, which is funded by him, in a major retreat on their staffing levels. Plastic pollution levels leaving seabirds with brain damage. And we're going to talk about global weirding as well, which is a climate whiplash which is hitting cities across the world. Delighted to say John Gibbons is with us. John, how are you getting on?
Very well, Will.
Can we start with global weirding? Because this one really stood out when we were looking at the topics for today. So this is a climate whiplash which is hitting some of the biggest cities around the world. And we're even talking about like a flip in the climate of these cities in a fairly short period of time. So Madrid and Rio among them. In the last 20 years, we're talking about like quite a change about the climate within the cities in a very, very short period.
That's right. I suppose the backstory to all of this, of course, is the heating effect that we're already seeing is pushing a huge amount of additional moisture into the global atmosphere. And that's sort of having two effects. One, of course, is in intensifying droughts because the evaporation is increasing. And of course, it's also intensifying downpours. And what this report established was that 90% of climate disasters around the world are as a result of either too much or too little water. And what we're seeing here, as you described it, it's a whiplash effect where you've got cities, for example, I'll give you a particular case. Nairobi in Kenya has had long-term issues with a lack of water and drought. They've had to contend with drought conditions for decades. Now, in more recent times, it's actually switched around. And they're now having to deal with flooding conditions. So animals that were dying from drought a couple of years ago, they now have animals that are actually dying as a result of severe flooding conditions. So this is that whipsaw effect where the climate is swinging violently backwards and forwards. So I suppose in simple terms, what we're looking at here is the gradual, or maybe not so gradual, destabilization of what used to be a predictable climate system. Now, that system it wasn't easy in places. There were areas, for example, of the world that were very warm that they had to deal with difficult high temperatures. But the issue now is how, for example, does a city make preparation? A city, for example, that is used to drought now has to deal with torrential rainfall and destructive flooding. And one of the things that happens with severe rainfall and destructive flooding is a loss, ironically, a loss of drinking water, because the rainfall overruns the water supplies and contaminates them with sewage and so on. So one of the great ironies is that it's the proverbial water everywhere and not a drop to drink. So we're seeing cities that used to suffer from drought that now have water shortages, ironically, as a result of severe downpours. And the only thing I'd say here, Will, is that all the indications are that this process is intensifying and we're seeing more and more. In fact, one of the scientists quoted in the report said that what we're approaching is what they call a global day zero. This is where 4 billion people already facing water scarcity reach breaking point, and the food, health, energy, nature and security that they depend on for reliable water supplies breaks down. And that's 4 billion people in deep trouble. So that's what they mean by global day zero. And this is the effect, by the way, the combined effect of fast rising global temperatures. We're seeing this right across the world. It's more intense in some parts than other, but everywhere around the world is experiencing rising temperatures. And what that is creating is far more energy in the global climate system. And of course, that, as I say, is playing itself out both in more intense droughts and also in more intense precipitation events.
And also, John, when I look at this and look at the 112 cities as part of this study, the reason I use Madrid is because it's so close to home. But when I look at a lot of the cities that are here, many of them are in the Middle East or possibly in South Asia, where a lot of the water infrastructure probably isn't great in some of these cities. And we're looking at really, really highly populated areas, in some cases already in floodplains as well. This could have catastrophic damage, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, I suppose this, each one of these studies, if you like, is a straw in the wind. And what you look at really, rather than one study, is the overall trend line. And probably the most significant trend line that we're looking towards as we move towards mid-century. And of course, we're closer now to mid-century, to 2050, than we are to the millennium in 2000. So it is a reminder, it's coming up on us very quickly. And as we look out towards 2050, we're looking at probably, depending on how this all plays out, maybe areas of the world that are currently home to between 1 billion and 3 billion people being too hot for human habitation by the middle of this century. In other words, as close as we are today to 2000, we are to 2050. So we're looking at in the relatively near term, and this is the many people listen to us today will still be relatively young by mid-century, and we're looking at that stage at the almost certain likelihood of mass migration. The key impact, often not thought about in relation to global climate change, the most devastating impact is forced climate migration, where people have no choice but to leave their areas as those areas become dangerously hot, and the water system breaks down, and of course the food supplies begin to deteriorate to a point where they can no longer support the populations. And we're already seeing this in areas, for example, in Central America and in other so-called hotspots. But what we're expecting to see over the next 25 years is this process accelerating, particularly as global temperatures rise towards two degrees centigrade above pre-industrial. And that will render maybe a fifth of the land surface of the earth too hot for humans and too hot for animals. And obviously all the food that is produced there as well, that won't be produced either. So we're heading into some very, very difficult times.
Yeah, some of the cities potentially within this survey that they've looked at, 17 that are particularly vulnerable, I see among them Dallas in Texas, you're looking at Baghdad, Bangkok, the megacity of Jakarta, which is hugely populated in Indonesia. They're also looking at perhaps one of the most vulnerable being Karachi in Pakistan, which, John, only 2 or 3 years ago, people probably remember the terrible floods and mudslides that happened there as well. So they've already experienced extreme weather conditions.
That's correct. And again, many of the low-lying countries are also facing, on top of this, they're also facing coastal inundation. So that's a huge issue, particularly in East Asia, where we have many low-lying countries with maybe 100 million people facing forced evacuation as a result of sea level rise and coastal inundation. And of course, the other problem with sea level rise the loss of coasts is that the seawater contaminates the soils. And a lot of our best soils, in fact, are in river deltas running down to the sea. So many populations, for example, like the Nile Delta, some of the very best agricultural land is very close to sea level and is extremely vulnerable to being lost as we get more and more inundation of salt water.
Okay, let's have a look at some studies that have been mainly focused around the University of Tasmania in Australia. But this is, John, plastic pollution leaving seabirds with brain damage that's been compared to humans who've had Alzheimer's.
Yeah, it's a pretty devastating study. And again, as you describe it, what we're looking at here is widespread. I mean, I suppose basically plastic is everywhere. We now live in an age of plastic pollution worldwide. There are tens of millions of tons of plastic, which breaks down, by the way, in the environment into what are called microplastics and nanoplastics. Nanoplastics, the plastic particles are so fine that they can actually pass through the membranes in the body. So they end up, for example, lodged in your brain, lodged in your organs. So this particular study, it identified a cell rupture and neurodegeneration in seabirds. They also did blood tests that established that the plastic pollution had left the chicks with severe health issues, disruption to the stomach lining, their livers, kidneys and brains. And obviously, as this is passing into the brain tissues, it is giving for all intents and purposes, the impression that these animals are suffering from what we would call dementia or Alzheimer's disease. One particular chick that was studied, and these are small shearwater chicks, was found to have over 400 pieces of plastic in its body. And it constituted the plastic in the chick's body amounted to somewhere between 5% and 10% of the animal's body weight. So we've known this, by the way. Plastic pollution is not a new thing. It's really been building up since the 1960s. And scientists have been studying it and being expressing alarm at the proliferation of plastic. We're using more and more of it. We're a throwaway culture where we use something, it gets disposed of. And of course, the problem really with plastic is there is no away. It never goes away. Effectively, once plastic is released into the environment, it simply breaks down under the action of chemical action of sunlight and of water. It just breaks down into smaller and smaller particles, and those particles spread out. And we know, for example, from other studies that the human body, we have plastic in our blood, we have plastic in our lung tissues, we have plastic probably in all of our organs. So it's just a fact of modern life, and something that, as this study indicates, it probably we need to be paying an awful lot more attention to, because you can have relatively low levels of plastic in your body without any obvious effects. But really, as we're seeing in smaller animals like seabirds, the accumulated damage is something that is now becoming more obvious and more, and they're probably better able to understand the implications of this as time goes by.
The other thing as well, John, it seems very clear that there's a few companies around the world which are producing a lot of this plastic pollution as well. When you see that 60 multinationals across the world are responsible for more than half of the entire plastic pollution, and six of those companies are responsible for almost a quarter of it. It would seem there's some very clear sources for this.
Well, absolutely. But the issue really is companies will produce something for which, first of all, they're allowed to sell and there's no regulations to prevent them from selling it. And of course, the thing of plastic is it is cheap and it is versatile. The other thing, Will, to mention about plastic, it's also a fossil fuel. So all this plastic that we're talking about is effectively made from the same stuff as the petrol that you put in your car or the diesel that you put in your car. So this is a fossil fuel. In fact, as fossil fuels are coming under pressure from renewables and so on worldwide, the fossil fuel industry has actually pivoted to producing more and more plastics, pushing hard for deregulation of plastic production. Not that, by the way, that there's very much regulation to start with. So we are seeing an increase in plastic production because, again, the industry is involved. They want an outlet for their product. And again, plastic is a very useful, very versatile substance, but very, very difficult environmentally. And we're producing it at maybe 100, maybe 1,000 times the rate at which we're able to process it. And effectively, there is no real way of integrating. Once plastic is produced, of bringing it safely back, there is no proper, you can recycle plastic to a certain extent, but even that, there's a point beyond which plastic cannot be recycled, and it has to go into other forms like incineration, which of course creates a whole other set of problems.
I just want to touch on what's happened in the USA as well. We're going to be talking about the Trump administration and changes around DEI in a few minutes time, but the FBI even, John, at the moment are been told to make a push at this stage to criminalize some of the climate groups in the United States.
That's right. I mean, I suppose this is a dramatic ratcheting up of, I suppose, the authoritarianism of the Trump regime, where they're now targeting, for example, we know that Citibank, one of the big banks in the US, in a court filing this week, it confirmed that it was forced by the FBI to freeze funding received by environmental groups. This is legitimate funding, by the way, and the groups in question, groups like Habitat for Humanity and so on, they received this funding from the Biden administration specifically for environmental projects. So the notion of criminalizing them for having this money, I mean, essentially this is a mafioso style shakedown. The idea here is to use the instruments of the law to intimidate and as a form of legalized harassment. There's nothing more than this. We know, for example, that Trump installed one of his own stooges as the director of the FBI. In fact, the outgoing director of the FBI, unfortunately, an independent person, resigned in protest, which is very unfortunate. So we also have the director of the EPA, a guy called Lee Zeldin, another Trump stooge. Well, I shouldn't even have to say that, because every organization and institution in America today is now stuffed with stooges whose only job is to do their master's bidding. But it's incredibly cynical stuff, Will, because all of this, of course, has been set out in the so-called Project 2025, which is the destruction, if you like, of American civil society. And part of that is waging war on NGOs, because, of course, the billionaires behind this, they hate environmental regulations because it might cost them a buck.
Well, look, the war is being waged on DEI policies as well. We'll be talking about that after the break. But John Gibbons, many thanks for joining us.
The Last Word on Today FM.